The Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division meeting will come to order Wednesday, April 15th. First item on the agenda today is to have representatives of our councils, the four councils, to report on their vision of how the 3/8 money from the constitutional amendment should be considered. Mr. Zander? Would you like to come forth?
Would you like to counsel together or one by one?
However, did you practice together? If you practice together, I want you all together. If you practice separately, you can do it however you wish.
Madam Chair, representatives, good question. The councils are trying to be very collaborative, but we all do have our independent appropriations. And my name is David Zander, Council on Asian Pacific. Our director, Eileen, is out of the country right now, and so she sends her regrets. I would first like to thank your committee administrator, Kerry, and your committee legislative assistant, Phil Chen, for helping bring me up to speed on this in the last 16 hours. I think I heard about this 3 o'clock yesterday. We're really delighted to be here, and I have some notes from Eileen, and you have packets from the council on our position. Looking at the constitutional amendment, as an anthropologist, I would first think that as well as geographic and regional fairness, we also need to think about ethnic fairness in the dispensation of these tax monies. And I'd like to show you a couple of things that we have done from the council. There are three areas that we want to bring to your attention that comes out of the council. May, Asian Heritage Month, is very big now in America with a proclamation that was fought hard for and at the state level, and each year now we do our best to really bring some awareness to the many Asian cultures that are in Minnesota. Personally, I've done many kickoff events in the Rotunda in each May. I've brought dancers and storytellers and mimes and musicians and community leaders and youth, and we have had a very wonderful history of doing May Heritage Month. We also run an annual banquet that has an award ceremony. So this is some of the ways that we would really look for some funding support for this ongoing work. Secondly, the Dragon Festival. There is in your package a little flyer showing this wonderful event now that is on Lake Phelan. It started from the council. Li Taozhong was our director, and he, I remember about 1988, he said, let's have a parade. And we had a parade. The first parade was a rainy day on University Avenue. We couldn't get permission from the police to fully close the road. I remember that very well. This festival grew, this parade, and it was held originally in May to really be a part of May Heritage Month. And Li Taozhong really wanted to bring a lot of attention to Frog Town and all the good things happening culturally. We had the event at the state capitol grounds. We had it at Herit Island. And then it moved to Lake Phelan and really launched off with bringing the dragon boats. Now, I would say upwards of 5,000-6,000 people come every summer. I'm the year of the dragon, so it's held on my birthday around July 12th. And companies like 3M, Honeywell, General Mills, there are these wonderful competitions of boats. There's performance stages all weekend long. There's children's activity area. And that is something that our council generated and also puts a lot of staff time into. So we are asking for some funding for that. I want to take the idea of cultural and arts deep. I don't see it as song and dance festivals. I think the role of culture in our community's lives is very deep. Unfortunately, we lost all the AIDS and juvenile crime prevention funding under Ventura. We have not had much success in getting that back to these agencies that really work with youth through their culture. As you look to having results under this visible identification direct results, I think that the good things that happen with youth through participating in their cultural organizations are very big. Last year we had the sesquicentennial, and I thought a lot about that. When was the first Asian in Minnesota? Do any of you know? Minnesota is 150 years old. When was the first Asian Pacific immigrant here? Well, I found out it was over 133 years ago. We put up a display in the North Corridor, and I kind of used my own funding for this. We're really in the red with the councils, but we had this in the North Corridor, and it really attempted to show the history of Asian Pacific immigrants. So if I could just run through this for a few seconds. Where would you think this beautiful temple is? And why does it relate to Minnesota? This is Bhutan, north of India, tiny country you might have think of as Shangri-La. We now have refugees from Bhutan here in St. Paul. They have been in the capital with me testifying. They had their first Bhutan Day at the International Institute. 100,000 refugees from Bhutan fled to Nepal, six refugee camps. The first groups are starting to come to Minnesota. So these are the latest waves.
Mr. Sander, you've exceeded the time that we gave you, and I apologize that we had so little time, but if you could sum up, we would appreciate it.
So the council is asking for $100,000 per year for 2 years to fund projects. We would like to do much more with displays like this. We would like to have support for our May Heritage Month event, $25,000 each. We would like support for what we're doing with the Asian Pacific Cultural Center. As you know, that has been vetoed twice by Governor Ventura and Governor Polanski, but it's still trying to get through the bonding bill, and some of the funding would help really the council in its work around programs for that. And secondly, fourthly, we would like more support for how we're working with youth and community organizations. And thank you for your time, and open to any questions.
In the things that you Representative Mulry, I was wondering why you were in the audience, and I thought we were going to do Victory Drive, or but here you popped up.
Representative Mulry, he's on our board, Madam Chair.
He's on your board, okay.
I am on the board, and I got the call for this morning, so I apologize for not being ready. But even though I've only been on the board a couple months or 3 months, I've worked with them a lot in the past because I'm the one that works with most of the Southeast Asian agencies in Hennepin County, especially. A lot of them started in North Minneapolis. And this council really has done a lot because a lot of these agencies really don't, at least the ones in Minneapolis, are not very well, they don't have a big background in how to organize things. And for instance, HAMA, the Hmong Association, SEAC, which is another Hmong association, especially Lao Cultural Center and Lao Assistance Center, which are on the north side. I've had a lot of experience over the years, and most of their programs are actually organized by the council here. So I've just, from past experience, not from my experience on the council, I know how important it is at actually helping these organizations function.
Good.
I think that was under a minute.
Good. You were just fine, Representative Mullery, and I thank you for your willingness to assist, because I think we need a little more work on the request that was just stated, in that we cannot supplant. We have to supplement. And the 3/8 money, we have developed this list of goals, Representative Mullery, and with that, it talks about the language in the Constitution or amendment, and Mr. Chen will see that you get a copy of this, and work on expressing those goals in a way that would supplant what the council is already doing, or supplement what the council is already doing, not supplant.
I'm sure I'll get out my dictionary.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sanders.
Thank you.
Mr. Collins? No. Or should I wait? Oh, I'll wait. Anna Marie Hill?
Good morning, Representative Murphy, members of the committee. My name is Jim Jones, Cultural Resource Director with Indian Affairs Council. I'm handing out a letter that was sent, that I addressed to Representative Murphy and members of the committee. In general, and I'll be real brief, I've been to in front of this committee a couple of occasions and all. One until wee hours in the morning.
Just after 10.
Hmm?
Just after 10.
Yeah.
Day and a half.
Does it sound hot?
There it goes again.
I asked that in regards to the legacy amendment dollars, arts access, arts preservation, cultural and heritage preservation in the state. Again, I bring forward the voice of the American Indian people, voices of the past, our ancestors that lay within the ground, and ancestors that keep accidentally getting unearthed, excavated, removed, remains that are turned over to us almost every month, boxes, skeletal remains, partial remains, things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis with Indian Affairs Council. Currently, we just did an inventory of our remains that we have left in our collection, and that's close to around almost 550 remains. I used to say it was close to around 350, but on new cases that have come to the Indian Affairs Council, that's what we have existing. 186 of those remains can go back tomorrow if the tribes in the Southwest came forward. But there's a process that we still have to go through with them to get one tribe to agree to take the remains that we have. We look at if we had one particular tribe come forward, 186 of those remains can go off tomorrow if they're ready. to take them, but they're not. The fund that the Indian Affairs Council is requesting is to supplement what we do already for the state under 307.08 Private Cemeteries Act. And under the law that we have to comply with, which is the unfunded federal law, the mandate, which is the Native American Graves Protection Repatriation Act. The Indian Affairs Council is requesting and looking at the Arts and Heritage Fund to allocate that money for the preservation of our burial sites, to identify these sites, to create a program that we can recover accidental unearthing the remains, respond immediately so that we can assist landowners when they hit a development, during a development, accidental unearthing, that we can respond quickly and immediately. We work in collaboration with the state archaeologists. So we're requesting 5% of the legacy funds to supplement the Indian Affairs Council budget for accidental unearthing, burial recovery, and to comply with NAICRA. Also, to help preserve Ojibwe and Dakota languages within Minnesota, to promote and preserve the American Indian arts and artists within the tribal community. The Indian Affairs Council will utilize these funds for the purpose in which they are intended, as per statute and what the legacy amendment dedicated the funding for, under the arts and arts cultural preservation.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Questions? Be happy to answer.
Representative Lopper. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Jones. I think preserving our Native American history is important and arts and culture. Can you tell me a little bit about how you would work with the non-tribal affiliated Native American persons in our communities? I know that I represent some people who have, you know, who clearly identify themselves as Native American but have not been able to retain over the generations their tribal affiliation, and yet they are looking for a way to be connected. And I would just be interested in your ideas on how, if we were to grant you additional resources to do this, how we might engage those people who are really looking for a bigger connection in their lives to past cultures and affiliations, even though they can't identify to a direct lineage of a tribal membership.
Mr.
Jones.
Chair Murphy and Representative, are you referring to non-federally recognized tribal communities within the state? Under the law, under NAICRA, under the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, those members also have to be contacted, and there's two or three listed within the state. There's a War Road Band of Chippewa, Sandy Lake Band of Ojibwe, and also, and I believe the community that you refer to is the Mendota community, have to be contacted in regards to collections that may be associated with the Dakota community. So under NAICRA, we have to send a letter to those tribal communities notifying them of collections, for instance, remains that may come from, say, like Pilot Knob in that vicinity there. We actually had a case that came up just like that, where remains came from the cemetery association. And so under NAICRA, we have to send a letter notifying that community, even though they're not federally recognized. We have to comply with that.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Representative Lopper. And Mr. Jones, I guess I wasn't very clear. What I was thinking of is people who I represent who identify themselves as Native American, but their relatives, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, at some point lost a connection to an organized tribe. But they would really like to pick up
of greater understanding. They may not even know what tribe they're affiliated with, but they believe themselves to be Native American. And so I'm just thinking, if we were to guarantee these additional resources that you're talking about, how would you reach out to, for instance, urban Native populations that may not be legally connected and see themselves as a member of a specific tribe because that connection was lost for whatever reason through history, but who really do want to learn more about arts and culture and the traditions of the various Native peoples of Minnesota?
Michelle. Chair Murphy, Representative Lossler. I'm Anna Marie Hill, Executive Director of Indian Affairs. We deal with those situations all of the time, and we are not exclusive in our work. We don't exclude anyone. People, we don't ask for your identification or your identification card. You know, we are probably one of the only card-carrying minorities. We have our little card that we carry around that says we're from a federally recognized tribe. But we work very hard to be inclusive with everybody, and currently we do have people that work with us and for us and on behalf of the people who identify themselves as American Indian and perhaps are not from an affiliated tribe. But we do everything that we can to include them in the community in every way, be it culture, history, art. One of the most common questions we can be asked is, can you help me find my roots? Can you help me enroll? Of course, we have to refer that to the tribal entity because the entity is the one that makes the decision with enrollment. We're also currently looking at how does the enrollment affect each of us individually. As we know, there's as we intermarry and intertwine with different cultures and communities, I myself am part of that. The blood quantum becomes less and less in your children. That doesn't make them any less part of the community or important. However, it does exclude them from being enrolled. And we even have situations where it can be from tribe to tribe. So grandma can be from White Earth and grandpa can be from Red Lake, and you have full quarter Indian children who cannot be enrolled, and we're addressing that because we don't want to see our people eliminated in the status, which will could conceivably happen. So these things are being looked at, but I assure you we're inclusive in Indian affairs and approachable and work with everybody that we can. There are many, many of us who identify as Native and would like to know how we fit in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oscar Asanda. Asandi.
Attendee, Officer Attendee, Madam Chair. Thank you very, very much. A very, very good morning to you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for the invitation to testify before you today. My name is Officer Attendee, and I am the Community Liaison for the Santa Latino Affairs Council. Mr. Rogelio Munoz, our Executive Director, and Rosa Talk, our Legislative Director, are currently away in Washington, D.C. Section 1 of the Minnesota Constitutional Amendment passed last year dedicates 19.75% of the revenue raised by this amendment towards preserving the Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. In these few minutes, allow me to share with you the proposal of the Chicano Latino Affairs Council and the reception and disbursement of some of these funds. As you know, Madam Chair and members of the committee, the Council was founded in 1978 with a primary mission to transmit the voices of the Latino community, advise the governor, and the Minnesota legislature. Every year, CLAC dedicates itself to the investigation of a specific public policy issue that impacts Minnesota Latinos. 2 years ago, when our focus was education, we published a report on the state of Latino students in our public schools. The report assisted statewide conversations and reform in helping to address and provide solutions to the significant educational achievement disparity of the 46,000 Latino Minnesota students that sit in our classrooms today. As a result of this work, our executive and legislative directors traveled this week to Washington, D.C. under the invitation of the American Federation of Teachers and National Education Association. At the same time, CLAC has been recognized at the national level by the U.S. Hispanic Leadership Institute and other national state Latino councils and commissions as having an effective research community model that works to address disparities in education with Latino students. Last year, CLAC engaged the policy theme of health disparities in Minnesota. I was the one who traveled throughout the metro area as well as several communities in greater Minnesota. We published a report on our findings and recommendations. As a result of this research, CLAC also convened over 200 participants and agencies in January in Minnesota's first historic Latino legislative capital, a first for our state. Furthermore, the research was conveyed to the Commission of Health and added value to the state's Eliminating Health Disparities Initiative legislative report. CLAC would like to ask for an additional $25,000 aimed at this community and legislative research. That is, in the face of budget reductions, we would ask for $12,500 per year to supplement our summer engagement of the state's Latino community. Our aim for the coming biennium is to continue our quantitative and qualitative research in the focus area of economic and workforce development. As you know, the cultural heritage of Latino Minnesotans extends from family to Cinco de Mayo celebrations to quinceañeras, Hispanic Heritage Month, the vibrancy of Minneapolis' Lake Street and St. Paul's West Side. Here are some economic facts for your consideration. Mexican Americans in Minnesota have an estimated buying power of $1.1 billion. According to the 1997 census, our last data, there were 1,000 Mexican American business firms in Minnesota with $213 million in sales. Latino labor contributes about $480 million in annual value to the economy of South and Central Minnesota. Our aim in these two-year engagements is to partner with DEED, the Department of Labor, and workforce centers in an effort to maximize existing state resources, identify gaps so that we can find solutions to lower unemployment and educating a skilled workforce. Further considerations include sustaining Minnesota's future workforce in a new area, green jobs, weatherization projects, renewable energy, and healthcare infrastructure. Our goal is to identify tangible, actionable public policy solutions that provide for positive human services and increase self-sufficiency for all Minnesotans. Today, I would also like to take this opportunity to petition your supplemental consideration on a special CLAC project, namely, the complete count of all Latino Minnesotans in the upcoming federal census. In recognition of the cultural and demographic shifts in our state, CLAC would ask for an additional appropriation of $25,000 for the biennium. This sum would be dedicated to identifying Latino Minnesotans, which are a growing, historic, and vibrant source of cultural heritage in Minnesota. State demographer Martha McMurray projects that by 2015, Latino Minnesotans will become the second largest population in the state. That's about 324,000 Minnesota Latinos. What is significant about these numbers is that Minnesota Latino heritage is very, very young. It is growing and it is vibrant. The median age of Latinos in Minnesota is 25. The median age of Minnesota-born Latinos is 14. And the median age of foreign-born Latinos, these are transplants, such as myself, is 31. In a presentation to the Council of Crime and Justice 2 years ago, sociologist Malcolm Gladwell commented upon Minnesota's critical cultural indices. These are arrests, imprisonment, health disparities, achievement gaps, housing. I concluded that cultural and generational success is largely a function of how immigrant groups are treated by others. CLAC believes that it is incumbent upon the state to foster, recognize, and celebrate the accomplishments and presence of Latino Minnesotans. This is also why Rogelio is representing CLAC and joined Thomas Messenburg, the acting director of the U.S. Census Bureau in Washington, D.C., with other councils, Latino state councils and commissions in planning for the upcoming federal census to include the counts of all Latinos, especially here in Minnesota. Additionally, if every effort is made to count all Minnesotans, we are mindful of our effort in sustaining Minnesota's current congressional seats. congressional representation equates to fiscal resources and a greater Minnesota voice in Washington, D.C. The etymology of the word culture gives you the collective customs and achievements of people. Pratt believes that the culture of Latinos in Minnesota is at a crossroads. Rather than remaining a state identified by some of the largest national minority disparities in healthcare, housing, and education, we believe that Latinos in Minnesota can shine as an example of the best of Minnesota's children. I submit to you the case of Jeremy Hernandez, a 22-year-old Minneapolis youth worker who helped rescue more than 50 kids in the tragic bridge collapse some time ago. He was subsequently awarded the Above and Beyond Citizen Honor by the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation in Washington, D.C. Hopefully, this is a heritage that we'll pass to our children. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So you want some money to identify the Latino Minnesotans so that they get counted in the federal census, so that you can help the federal census be accurate.
Madam Chair, there's two requests for yourself and the committee's consideration. The first is our ReSermer research initiative for $12,500 per year. The second is the census supplement. So it's a total of $50,000 dispersed in that consideration. Is that okay?
Yes. That's fine, but I just... You're going to find them, and then you're going to identify them to the feds? Is that how it... That's the part I don't quite understand.
Yes, ma'am. We are partnering... There's a Minnesota Latino Complete Count Committee for the census that we're hosting. We're not... Sometimes it used to be the council that ran it. Not so this year. We are offering logistical support. However, because the committee has no funding of its own, and the census has some of the funding, we're working with partnering some of those funds, and we're offering our contact lists, our services, and our time in supplementing those funds for counting Minnesota Latinos. There was a very significant undercount last census, and I think this time next year, we should be able to offer extraordinary results for Minnesota. And we are aware of how these census numbers impact everything from roads to health care to free and reduced lunch and conversation support for schools in Minnesota.
How much federal money comes to Minnesota?
Yes, ma'am. It's $1 million for 100 people over 10 years. We're very mindful.
I like your idea of your approach to research. Thank you very much.
A pleasure.
Goodbye. Should I continue with the bills and then come back to the Council on Black Minnesota? I guess that's what I'll do. Representative Hansen. Help!
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm here to talk about House File 2285, and I've brought the sheet. And the area I'm looking at with 2285 is preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage in the Constitutional Amendment. And what 2285 is a history education learning program or HELP grant. My intent here is to create a system of grants that can supplement kind of what happens in bonding, but throughout our historical system in Minnesota, whether it's Minnesota Historical Society or the county historical societies or regional historical societies, I think one of our goals in this committee and as Minnesotans was to see the results of the amendment. My idea here is we have a number of historic sites and that grants would be given through a prioritized schedule to go to each of those sites. For example, maybe one year they go to Forestville State Park and you do all of the work on that park. Forestville historical site, you update it. You update the interpretive materials, you update if there's any changes that need to be done with ADA, other requirements. And then the next year, you go to another historical site and update that, so that Minnesotans can see the results of the grant. They can see the results of the constitutional money with the physical structure, the physical information that we have throughout Minnesota with the Historical Society. The other idea here is that we have the capital investment, but we also have the interpretive investment that needs to be done. I think of an example. I was out in Washington and went to one of the Smithsonians. And in one of the Smithsonians, you had all the signs, all the materials, all the interpretive data were like 30 years old, maybe 40 years old. In another building, you had a brand new interactive, interpretive, historical or Smithsonian type of exhibit. And you had kids being able to interact with that. You had many more people at that new interpretive Smithsonian than you did at the one that had the older, maybe out of date, maybe not telling the whole story, maybe not giving the whole information of the materials that we have now. So this is not picking a particular site. It's not particular doing a particular grant to a particular location, but setting up a system. I am aware that the Historical Society already has a grant program. I'm also aware that there are needs that are out there with acquisition and protection and with collections. What I'm trying to do here is to set up a grant program that can deal with our Minnesota Historical Society and the county historical societies with direct grants where you see exact results over the 25-year period. Hopefully we will get through all the Minnesota Historical Society sites and bring them up to date so that Minnesotans can see the investment in their history and cultural heritage.
Thank you very much. Question, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, you mentioned the grants to historical societies. Would nonprofit groups involved in historic preparation or preservation also be eligible under this?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, if you look on the back page on lines 2.4 to 2.8, it said the Minnesota Historical Society may make help grants to political subdivisions and county or local historical societies to pay up to 50% of the cost for eligible projects described in Subdivision 2. And some of those are, when you look at our Subdivision 2, we have kind of capital investments there, preservation, but modernization for interactive, interpretive, or cultural purposes at the site. So I'm not sure if you got, maybe I could talk to you about specific ideas that you have, but that's the language that I have in here that may allow for that type of thing.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Clark, 1634.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. And I have a resource person with me that can pass out some information on the buildings before you. This is the bill that deals with the African American History Museum and Cultural Center, and I'm really honored to bring this before you, Madam Chair. This was sitting, I think, in a committee that you were in before, too, but now it will be modified with an amendment to apply to this committee. And basically what we are doing here is to create in Minnesota a center that does not now exist, but that should exist. Minnesota is only one of a handful of states that does not have a historical museum for African Americans. And we can correct that with this proposal. It applies to the constitutional amendment in several ways, and I'll just indicate that it meets all the legal requirements. It would provide Minnesota with greater access to arts and culture activities and celebrate Minnesota's traditions and histories. It would encourage participation in the legislative process. It already has. These folks have come to the legislature, some of them for the very first time. And would work across traditional boundaries and encourage cooperation among multiple interest groups and communicate visible identification of a direct result of a constitutional amendment. Let me just tell you a little bit more about it. Its mission is to provide a historic cultural environment whereby all Minnesotans can increase their understanding
and historical knowledge of the significant contributions by Minnesota African Americans by exhibiting, teaching, and disseminating the unique history and cultural heritage of the state's pioneering African Americans. African Americans have contributed to the Minnesota landscape in ways that will come to life at this museum. It will fill a void that has been unmet in the annals of Minnesota history and culture. And as I mentioned, it's one of only a handful. I think maybe like six states or maybe a few more do not have this kind of African American museum. Cedar Rapids, Iowa even has an African American museum. In Minnesota, we have Russian Museum, Russian Museum, Swedish, Jewish, American Indian, Asian, and a Latino museum, but we do not have a similar facility for our African American citizens. It will have a significant impact on Minnesotans who are visiting various arts venues because it's located in property that's 1.5 blocks from downtown Minneapolis Convention Center. It's on a bus line. And the document that you have around passing around there, I think, shows you the building that is actually in the process of being converted. During the first year of operation, it's projected that conservatively about 5,000 visitors, many of whom will be children and their families, many of whom have never attended a museum or visited any other art venues, will participate in this museum's activities. The mansion that you're looking at there is called the Cole Mansion. It was a historic residence built in 1886. It's a picturesque representative of the Queen Anne architecture, located in the heart of one of the most diverse communities in Minnesota. It happens to be part of my district. And it was placed on the historic registry in 1980 after it sat vacant for more than a decade. So they're bringing this building back. There will be student intern opportunities in a variety of ways and some paid opportunities as well. Approximately a dozen non-traditional jobs, curator positions, educational director, outreach, coordinator grounds, and so on. Madam Chair, I'd be glad to answer any questions or see if you would like to hear from the person who's been working on this so diligently, answer any more questions that you might have.
Questions from the panel? Representative Clark, is the museum in progress now?
It is, Madam Chair. They've done some gutting of some of the parts of the building that were temporary structures that covered up fireplaces and other things like that. So it's just begun to have some work done on it.
So the building has already been purchased?
Yes, and I think I could...
By whom?
It's a nonprofit organization, and there are some... potential dollars from the city and from the county. It will be publicly owned by the county in a short period of time, I believe. I probably should ask Ms. Givens to give you that. Thank you. Just to give you the exact detail of the ownership, is that what you need?
It's a 501c3.
501c3, yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And it will, as Representative Clark has stated, eventually.
Will you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. My name is Roxanne Givens, and Madam Chair and members of the committee, it's a pleasure for me to be here, so thank you. Sorry about that.
You're welcome. Ms. Givens, we are not having testifiers today. We have specific questions, and mm-hmm. I appreciate that you came forth to answer that question.
Okay.
You're going forth with this already, Ms. Gibbons.
Yes.
I heard your presentation in the Bonnie Committee. Are you planning on staying in the Bonnie Committee request for the bonding year next year?
Madam Chair
Clark.
I actually think that this particular proposal fits this committee better. Because it is a cultural heritage and historic preservation, it meets all the legal requirements of the amendment to the Constitution to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage to the arts and culture part of the fund. So I think we'll stay in here. I'm not sure how much chance there is in the bonding committee, and this I don't want to wait for another whole year. I believe that the opportunity is here right now, and it'd be smartest for the community and for Minnesota to actually try to work with your committee on this, Madam Chair.
And so, Representative Clark, stating it so blatantly that you see this committee as a source of funding at this particular time
yes.
for your building.
Well, and it could be some of the operations too. I think the dollars that are in this bill that we presented to the bonding committee were for the building. I think the committee, actually, the bill itself needs to be, restructured, I guess, so that it's, I thought that I had given your committee an amendment that actually did that, Madam Chair, but I see that we have the original bill here before us today, so.
Representative Clark, early on in this committee, testifiers came before us with their visions, and operations was not something that most people that appeared before the committee to talk about. Operation funding was not a high priority. Programming, on the other hand, was much higher priority than operation. So Ms. Representative Clark and Ms. Givens, may I suggest that you put something in writing about how your proposal for the Minnesota African American History Museum best fits with the goals of this committee that was stated in the speech that I think we gave to Representative Clark, the Constitutional Amendment Investment Goals. And then we will see that that's distributed to the various committee members.
Okay. Yes, I can certainly put in writing what I kind of introduced in verbally. I'd be happy to do that.
Good idea.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question, I suppose, is of you. I missed it. But have we ever made a determination by this committee that we would fund the Bonneville project?
No, we have not, Representative Erdahl, and that's still at the top of my list of things to be decided.
I couldn't hear that. Was there a question about if we funded?
Whether we would fund Bonneville project.
Oh,
or whether we would bond. Whether we this committee would issue bonds. And direct competition to the bonding capital investment committee. Thank you, Representative Clark. Thank you, Ms. Givens.
Do you want me to take my other two bills to I have? Are you having me here?
Oh, Representative Clark, House File 2165.
Okay. I'm sure you have some.
What
we
did
have
this
done,
one
well.
Start out in this Representative Clark.
Madam Chair and committee members, this bill would provide for funding for Ojibwe and Dakota immersion programs. There's two of them that are identified, and again, this would meet the constitutional legal requirements under the Access to Arts and Cultural Activities Celebration of Minnesota's Traditions and Histories, actually preserving them, I have to really say, and I'll talk with you a little bit more about that. And it does work across traditional boundaries, encourage cooperation among multiple interest groups, and communicate, again, visible identification with the constitutional amendment investment. So the essence of a culture is really held in language. And what this bill does is to talk about Minnesota's first languages, Dakota and Ojibwe. And those are very important assets to Minnesota and to the world's linguistic resources. The complexity and unique aspects of Ojibwe and Dakota language provide important worldviews and concepts that can enrich all Minnesotans. There's an even more pressing need that I can tell you about to revitalize the Dakota and Ojibwe languages. And I think there was a little bit of discussion about this earlier with the Indian Affairs Council, too. But specifically to the purpose of this project, revitalizing the Dakota and Ojibwe languages is really important because of some of the bleak academic outlooks for young Native American children living in our state, particularly in some of the urban areas. Reclaiming the Dakota and urban Anishinaabe, Ojibwe Anishinaabe, reclaim the Dakota and Ojibwe language
is a part of goals for Native American people to reconnect to culture, educational achievement, and the positive self-image is in of itself an important indicator of academic, economic, and lifetime success for our family and for our community. When visiting the Dakota languages were forcibly and often violently taken away through our boarding schools, the integral connection between language, culture, literacy, and educational achievement was literally severed. At the beginning of the 20th century, there were more than 7,000 speakers of the Dakota language located in more than 24 different reservations, reserves, and homestead settlements in Minnesota, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, Manitoba, Montana, Saskatchewan. All of these speakers were either once residents of what eventually became the state of Minnesota, or they were descendants of these Dakota people. All were affected directly or indirectly by the tragic events of 1862, which resulted in the diaspora of the Dakota Nation and the uprooting and relocation of its people. The Dakota were scattered over a wide geographic area where their communities were sometimes isolated, often small, and placed amidst speakers of other native languages or dialects of Dakota, for example, Nakota and Lakota. The Ojibwe experienced a similar history. The Anishinaabe in Minnesota began experiencing their first land loss and diaspora in a series of treaties beginning in 1805. In both the U.S. and Canada, Dakota and Ojibwe children were removed from their homes and placed in federal and church-run boarding schools where the use of the native language was harshly punished. I have to tell you, I've heard this from people of my generation, Native people, who talked about what happened when they tried to speak their own languages in the boarding schools. By the 1950s, three generations of Dakota and Ojibwe had grown up in boarding school environments. Because of the stigmas they experienced when speaking their own language, many were reluctant to use the language or teach it to their children. And as a result of these and other forces, there's a notable attrition in the number of fluent language speakers that began to occur then. Much of the adult population over 40 years of age were still fluent speakers in the early 1970s. Even though many admitted that by the standards of their grandparents' generation, they spoke a broken Dakota or Ojibwe. Among the younger generations, however, proficiency in the native language was rapidly diminishing. During the next 30 years, the rates of fluency experienced a precipitous decline among all age groups, and today there are less than 13 fluent Dakota speakers living in Minnesota, and less than 300 fully fluent Ojibwe speakers living in Minnesota. Lukoi Nandakaydan Urban Immersion Project and the Nagani are the only two immersion programs in Minnesota. These immersion programs are widely held to be the primary strategy to produce speakers of the Dakota and Ojibwe language. Madam Chair, what this bill does then is provide funding to the program for those two immersion programs. And I'll just stop there and see if there's questions. I hopefully have explained why this is so urgent and why it would have, definitely be part of preserving the cultural heritage that is indicated in the constitutional amendment, and certainly encourage use of funds across the traditional boundaries and cooperation among many groups.
Representative Clark, where did this bill start this year?
Madam Chair, it went to education, finance. It did not get a hearing there this year, so it seemed like it was appropriate to bring it here. It came in pretty late, so that was the reason for that. It was something that came quite late, so I don't blame that committee. But as we talked about it, it seemed like, you know, there couldn't be a better committee to talk about preserving the cultural heritage in this committee. So that's why it's here.
Representative Clark, where is the Ojibwe immersion school?
There's one in Leech Lake and there's one in South Minneapolis. The two, I believe the Nagani is the one up at Leech Lake. I do have someone here who could give you specific answers to those questions, but I believe that's correct.
And where is the Dakota Immersion School?
That's the one that's in South Minneapolis, and the other Ojibwe one is the one up at Leech Lake. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. So the Dakota is in Minneapolis, I believe, South Minneapolis. Is that correct? Maybe I just need to double check on this, but I think that's correct. Maybe I could ask for just a clarification, Madam Chair, to my witness.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marissa Carr. I'm a teacher for the Lucharia Nandakaydan Urban Immersion Program, and we operate both Ojibwe and Dakota Immersion in South Minneapolis. And additionally, Nizani is an immersion school on the Leech Lake Reservation.
Okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, to the testifier. How many students are currently in the program?
Ms. Carr.
I know that at the Retreat program, we currently have probably somewhere around 50 students off the top of my head. We have three classrooms, one Dakota classroom and two Ojibwe classrooms. Two of our classrooms have 20 students each, and another one of our classrooms, I think, has around 10. And I'm not sure how many students we have at Nizani.
And Ms. Carr, who's paying for those programs now?
Well, I know at the Retreat program, we mostly rely on grants that we've received from private foundations as well as in partnership with Indian Ed and Minneapolis Public Schools. I know that at Nizani, they function within a BIA school, so I think that's where they receive some of their support, but I'm not really qualified to answer for them.
Mr. Jones. Just to come down for a minute. Mr. Jones, in your earlier remarks, you talked about preserving the Native American languages. And do you have, in your mind, in your vision of how the Native American languages would be preserved, do you have a way that that would be done differently than in House File 2165?
Representative Murphy and members of the committee, Indian Affairs Council is involved with Ojibwe Dakota language preservation, and there's a bill, I believe, that's being formed. House File 1229, I think, is the bill to create a task force to look at existing programs that are out there currently, and looking in detail the program at Leech Lake and the one within the city to preserve Ojibwe and Dakota languages that are held within the state. We're working with Representative Olson on, and I believe that's the Senate file.
Senator Mary Olson?
Senator Mary Olson on that language. So the Indian Affairs Council is deeply involved in the language preservation in the state and working with organizations to do that. And currently there is a bill on the Senate file that's coming through to look at existing programs and report back to the education.
To the Education Committee?
Education Committee, and I think that Minnesota Department of Education, I think it's, there was initially $150,000 that was requested under that language, but I believe that that part of it was taken out, and the bill is still existing for evaluating the programs that are out there so that we can go back and make recommendations on how to preserve the Ojibwe and Dakota languages within Minnesota.
Okay.
In the letter that the Indian Affairs Council sent to you, we're looking at including those programs as part of the funding that would come through MIAC.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Clark. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Representative Clark, are you familiar with that other,
yes,
the task force idea?
Yes, Madam Chair, and they're very complimentary, and
that fits with your vision also.
Right, and I can just tell you that the funding stream would be coming to the Indian Affairs Council, and you can confirm that if you want to talk to the folks about that. So that's the most appropriate way that the funding would come through, and I think the way they work with each other is one is something on the ground right now that needs to be preserved, and the other one is developing a broader strategy as well.
Thank you very much. Representative Clark, House File 2260.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You can see I have a great deal of trust
and
in your committee.
I can see that we're over 15 minutes on Representative Clark, too. So do this one quicker, Representative Clark.
I'll try to be brief, Madam Chair. This is a bill that's near and dear to my heart. And I know you've been involved in many of the committee members have been here for a couple of years have. This has to deal with the East Phillips Cultural and Community Center. And again, I feel it's very fitting to bring this to this
Let
community.
Let me interrupt here for a minute. Representative, the committee members, you remember our testifier at the open hearing, Ms. Hunt, Renata Hunt, that talked about the East Phillips neighborhood and this very community center that is already in existence, is it not,
no.
Representative Clark?
No, Madam Chair. This is one of the few parks in Minneapolis. There's two of them, one on the north side and one on the south side. There's absolutely no park building for more than 6,000 or 7,000 children who live within about, I don't know, 6 or 8 blocks. So it does not yet exist. We did receive bonding money 2 years ago for part of it, and we're trying to complete the development of it with hopefully with some assistance from this committee, and that's what's before you.
And so no bonding money has been spent on the East Phillips Park Cultural and Community Center?
There has been design money and architectural drawings, and all of those things are almost near completion. I think they are almost near completion, Madam Chair. I've seen them, and you have before you, I think, the building plan that I can address. And, you know, soon they will be hopefully digging the ground on this, you know, hopefully. But we're seeking some federal dollars that we're waiting to hear that might be coming through, too. So this building, I have to say, and the whole process has been an incredible grassroots effort by people in the community to try to learn the whole process. How can they get assistance from the state legislature, from the federal government, from the private sector, to put together a facility for the children in this community. And I guess one of the things I want to say about this East Phillips area, it has 78% of the families have children. That's the highest percentage in not only Phillips and in Minneapolis, but also in the whole state in terms of percentage of families with children. 7,000 of those children are from minority ethnic groups in our state, and a majority have English as a second language. The reason for this building, a couple. One is the children really need strong cultural identities to do well, and they need to know who they are. And one of the things we're trying to do in this with the Community Center is to bring together, and we have so far successfully built a very strong grassroots organization, to bring together the diverse cultures so that they can play together, exercise together, work together, get to know each other and appreciate each other's diverse cultural history in one space. But now, there is no space to account for that in South Minneapolis. Madam Chair, I want to just tell you a very current reason for the need. I got a call yesterday from one of the moms at Little Earth of the United Tribes, which is right across kitty corner from the street where this building will be and where many of the children live who will be utilizing it. And there was a police gang task force that was doing an operation right there. We need a space for our young people to have a place to go, you know, to have productive activities. There's been such progress made at Little Earth, but we still do not have a place where people can go. You can see this includes a gym. And one of the things that is important to this committee is if you look at the circular space on the building plan here, this is where there will be a coming together. It's very much the circle. There is very much intended to be the cultural drawing point or centering point for the many communities that are here. As I mentioned, it's across the street from one of the largest concentrations of urban American Indians in the state. We have a large number of Latino folks. There's all kinds of soccer teams that play on this empty field right now. We have a high proportion of Somali youngsters and families, and of course the community that was there before. So, Madam Chair, I want to just indicate to you that you can help make this dream of people having some of diverse cultures come together. If any of you have ever been over to the Wellstone Center in St. Paul, you can see the kind of cultural heritage that you can depict with art that we hope will happen in this center circle here in Manicure. That's what this is about.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much, Representative Clark. Representative Swale.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdoff.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just want to compliment you for remembering what Renata Hunt told us at 2 in the morning.
That's a little after time.
Representative Swales, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. It is so gracious of you to allow me the opportunity to come for an informational hearing. I appreciate it. I am coming on behalf of Arts Connection, which is a part, it's an arts group in Woodbury, Minnesota. I have had, by way of background, a lot of involvement with this group. Just so you know, I am a classically trained soprano. Someday, if you'd like me to sing for you, I will be glad to do that. I am a performer, and I'm a director. All great qualifications to become a legislator. I have had the great opportunity to serve on the board of directors for the Woodbury Community Theater, and I've also served as the president of its board. I can tell you that over the 33 years that this community theater has been in existence, there's been some interesting things when you have to provide for the nuts and bolts of community theater. Over the years, we have a beautiful collection of costumes. However, we've had to store them in a garage, in a barn, and now they're being stored in a trailer. Props. We have extensive props, many of them custom made for numerous musicals and productions over the years. They were stored for a long time in a 100-year-old barn that was filled with bats and bat dung. Now they are stored in another barn, an old cottage grove, and getting access to our props is always very difficult, particularly during winter performances. Rehearsals are never easy. We have to roam from church fellowship halls to classrooms in schools to cafeterias, and part of that is because of the busy, busy stage schedule of the school district. So what I passed out to you is a plan that has already been drawn up by Paul Youngquist, who is an architect, that shows that in our new facility, the East Ridge High School, that will be open for the first time next fall. We have worked out a relationship with the school district, just like the athletic associations work out relationships with using fields and sharing school facilities for sports events. The school district has allowed the Arts Connection to develop a plan where we would have a black box theater added to the existing theater that the school district has built for the new high school. It would have a scene shop, it would have a costume storage area, and it would have a prop room. It would also have an art gallery and offices for the members of the arts community to be able to use on a full-time basis. The beauty of a black box theater, and a lot of people say, what is a black box theater? It is a smaller theater. It's really a rehearsal space, but it can also be used as a recital space. We have many voice teachers, instrumental teachers, and so forth in Woodbury. Once again, they scramble to find sites for their recitals. It can be used a lot for rehearsal. So you could have a performance going on the main stage in the high school auditorium and still be rehearsing other productions in the Black Box Theater. This is what we think makes a community alive and vibrant. It's not just athletics that you bring to a community that involves the citizens of that area, but it's the arts. For me, arts have been transforming. I have seen students come alive because of the arts who finally found their niche in the educational system. So I will keep this very brief. I just wanted to introduce the idea to you. We were not able to get this in time for deadlines this year, but with your guidance, Madam Chair, and maybe other members of the committee, if you can help me craft this so that it could move forward next year in the next session, I would be deeply appreciative.
Thank you. Question? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Kelly. House File 2276.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning with what I believe is an opportunity for you. The language in Article 11 of our state's Constitution now reads that 19.75% of the straight sales tax goes to the arts. And more specifically, it states that it would go to the arts, arts education, and arts access. And I think access is the critical word here. You know, I went on the internet and did a quick search on Deformed Performing Arts in Minneapolis, and it returned about 1.4 million hits on there. And then broke it down to actual physical places where you could go and actually enjoy the arts. And within a five-mile radius, over 100 physical places showed up. And I think that's certainly a tribute to the Minneapolis area, which is rich in its arts heritage, and we're known throughout the nation for that. But the problem is, what do you do if you don't have access to that? If you don't have access to that, if you're not from the metro area and you're out in greater Minnesota, you generally have to do with what you have, or you do without. I'm here this morning requesting investment into the arts community in greater Minnesota. Lake City is a community approximately 90 miles from the Minneapolis area. It's a community not uncommon to many of the communities in outstate Minnesota. They have a single auditorium that looks much like it did back in 1910 when it was made. And this is where the entire community gathers for plays, exhibits, concerts, and many other events. It's truly a community gathering place. They unfortunately have not been able to keep the auditorium up. So what they did, they took it upon themselves to create a program to start rejuvenating the place. They decided that the community needs to invest in the arts and in this facility itself. So they created a program where they're going to raise $83,000. They're making a capital investment to simply replace the seating. And I'm sure that they will achieve that goal. Unfortunately, the cost of updating a facility like this is more than eight times that amount. Their project needs $750,000 to be completed. This project includes a complete sound system, lighting system, and simple accessibility issues. I'm sure this is nothing in the budget in the realm of the Guthrie Theater or the Ordroy, which we have here, but this is a small community. They're not asking for a handout. They're asking for a true supplement. Okay, well, we talked about not supplanting, but supplementing, and this is exactly what this community is asking for. I don't know if any of you remember the bookmobile of times past. Well, I grew up in a rural area, and I remember the bookmobile coming around, which gave us access to libraries. And I remember being one of those kids who felt like it was Christmas when the bookmobile would come around, and I had access to the world of literature. And I think it truly changed me from just being able to pick out books I never knew existed, and it opened up the world to me. So I look at this as an opportunity to bring that to places like Greater Minnesota. Madam Chair, you and I had a brief conversation yesterday, and I asked, what was your vision for this task that you have in front of you? And I thought you gave a very intriguing answer, and it was, if we fast forward to 25 years from now, and we look back, we should be able to see what we've accomplished with these doubts. And I think this is an actual opportunity to invest in the art community and to bring forth and expand and give access to greater Minnesota. And I appreciate your consideration this morning.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. You did just fine all by yourself.
I did.
Representative Kelly, we have bookmobile in the Arrowhead region. Comes every 2 weeks.
That's great. I actually wasn't sure if it still existed.
Yeah, but it's still around. This auditorium that you're speaking of, the theater part that you're speaking of, did you say it was built in 1910?
Correct.
And that their mat is going to be on seating for $83,000?
Correct. And in a town of less than 5,000 people, this is a lofty goal. But again, I believe that the community will back that. They actually started a program. They're in the process. They've already are fundraising. What they're doing is that if you donated $100, you get your name or a name that you want to honor someone in the back of the seat. I thought it was a fantastic approach. I think everybody will take part in it. So they are actually going out, and this is their initiative. They will raise this, and I'm sure they will do that. But again, they will not be able to complete a project like this without our help.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I also used to use the bookmobile when growing up. House File 2241 relates to arts education, and arts access. And I brought some materials that I can make available to the committee. One of the emerging issues relating to art is the use of the products and the materials that are used in the arts. For example, there may be sometimes lead in paint, or that the dust that's involved in creating art. There could be materials used in glazes with clay. A number of these products that we've used over the years there may be different or safer alternatives that are out there. And so what House File 2241 does is it provides grants for public schools. This will help out arts access. It would be a new program. I think it may be rare for public schools now to be able to upgrade their arts department, to change the materials that they're using, to bring them up to some of the 21st century products that they have in greening their arts department. And so this provides grants that would go. It helps not only in the art department, but it's going to provide kids with using safer materials when they are there. There is a great deal of literature and the material on this. If you went on the internet and Googled safer arts materials, it's been an issue in colleges. I'm limiting this to and I have an open appropriation. I'd be interested in even a pilot project to start this out so that it can be grants to schools to upgrade art facilities with using safer alternatives, kind of greening our arts department.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Mullery, do I understand that you're prepared to speak for the Council on Black Minnesotans? Oh, Mr. Banks. Good. You get by without talking sometimes, Mr. Banks.
No, that's very, very fortunate.
And that's what you were hoping for today, I bet, huh? I think we're pretty fortunate to have you in front of us today. So, yeah. Representative Mullery, you let Mr. Banks talk partly.
Madam Chair, I think that he's quite well known everywhere. Madam Chair, I don't have a long background on this. I got drafted this morning. But I know the background of this because I used to be appointed to the Council on Black Minnesotans until a few months ago, and actually when I ran into the vice chair right after the new appointments came out, she said that the council, several members were mad that the governor didn't reappoint me. So I have to explain this. It was the infinite wisdom of a certain office or corner in this building that didn't reappoint me. So, but I actually, for instance, they've invited me, and I'm still very active. I was the only legislator at the meeting last night before that are appointed weren't there. So I am aware of the background, and the council's been very active in these areas in the past, but just had no way of getting at them. So I think Mr. Banks would be best at explaining how they developed this program, not to go at what we were considering as an issue, but not knowing what how to get at it.
Mr. Banks.
Madam Chair, committee members, we really thank you for this opportunity and apologize for the tardiness and delay in terms of this presentation today. The council is very much interested in promoting culture, art, civic engagement, and some of the democratic values that are associated with the American culture. And we are asking for $182,000. You have a document that expresses some of the vision that we have associated with this particular issue. And it's a very complex and complicated issue because what it involves is the interaction and collaboration between and the integration of several programmatic factors. The council has had a long history, and the state of Minnesota has had a long history in terms of promoting cultural values and cultural leadership. The leadership from the National Urban League with Whitney Young and the NAACP, etc. What this program does essentially is it is an extension of our efforts in the area of the Governor's Commission for the Martin Luther King statewide celebration. What it does in essence is takes a one-day event for the most part, and we want to expand it so that we can have some year-round activities associated with the promotion of culture and cultural heritage and civic engagement. And so what we want to do essentially is to utilize part of the dollars for the development of a telecommunications infrastructure that will promote the involvement of individuals in the community. For example, we have a recognition committee that recognizes the contributions of African and African Americans to the state of Minnesota. What we want to do is to expand that. We want to collaborate with other organizations like the Urban League, like 11 Who Care. I mean, all these organizations, for the most part, that identify and celebrate the contributions of individuals of our community in a consolidated fashion to act as a repository for the information regarding the contributions, the specific contributions of individuals in this community that have made a definite impact on our culture and on our heritage in the state of Minnesota. That's one of the things. We also want to, on the other side of the equation in terms of technology, be able to have a what we call an affirmative action baseline study, a resource. We all know that the Secretary of State does a report annually, or every 2 years actually, that deals with the composition of boards and commissions and initiatives and these kinds of things in the state. What we're after essentially is to promote greater involvement by the utilization of our asset bank, which is part of the recognition bank, to get greater involvement, greater civic engagement in terms of policy issues, cultural issues, etc. And so this is what we would like to do. We're asking for $182,000. You will see in the budget that the largest amount we're requesting is for $41,000 for the specialists, for the IT specialists that we need in order to construct and put together our information systems. I would like to, at this point in time, open up for questions because it's a complicated proposal and it really expresses a complicated perception of what our vision is for the future. So I thank you.
Okay. Mr. Banks, the $41,000 for the IT thing, that's your major telecommunication thing that you were talking about.
Exactly. We do not, at this point in time, have that kind of capability. I am somewhat of I'm good at information systems and evaluation in terms of the design and constructing and making determinations as to what variables should be incorporated, but I am not a technician that would be able to utilize existing software and manipulate it so that we could design and implement an information system that would meet our goals.
And this, your civic engagement initiative is not part of that other civic for Minnesota thing that Ms. McGuire is part of. Am I correct?
Correct. This is specifically we're going to be focusing on African American constituencies and trying to educate them into what policy issues are, what the opportunities for volunteering are in the state government. I mean, while the Secretary of State does a study that involves 200 various units, there are well over 1,000 kind of efforts that are going on in that particular capacity. For example, the Governor's Workforce Development Council, we know that we have no African-American or populations of color representation on that, but they have sub-units in there, the Disparities Committee, the Evaluation Committee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the working committees and all this stuff. And so what we want to do is to do a survey that really allows us to determine the level of involvement and how we are being utilized so that we can more effectively utilize the resources that we have in the African American and African communities.
Okay, good. It's a coalition, and this is a group you should have added to your coalition, Ms. McGuire. Mr. Bay, thank you very much.
Yeah, there is an information update that if you have any questions, you can contact me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I thank you very much for this opportunity. But I also thank Representative Mullery for assisting me in this endeavor.
We have 11 pages right here, though, to be able to figure out what we need.
Okay, Madam Chair.
You represent Mullery.
Thank you. Just a couple points, and I wasn't involved in the development of the IT part of it, but I was involved with the concern and learning about it from the African elders, for instance. I used to meet with them. We even had a meeting with the Attorney Generals about the problems with youth in the immigrant community from Africa and the need for developing programs to work with the youth on the cultural history, because they have a very strong cultural history of education and morals and things like that, which is broken down, and the need for that, which this would get at. And also, what I think Mr. Banks forgot to bring up was the part about the developing the cultural history and the youth here. If you've gone to the Martin mm-hmm. Luther King Museum in Atlanta, you know that his effort to develop an understanding of the strong moral and community responsibility culture through the African American youth was part of his major efforts, and the arts are and the culture are just part of this. In fact, way back when I was on the Minneapolis Arts Commission, we used to stress funding for the cultural of the people of color communities, and unfortunately that money got lost, and we've had more problems with not having that going on.
Thank you very much. Found out a lot about you this morning, Representative. Arts Commission, the Council on Black Minnesotans, the Council on Asian. This is good.
We need
a whole new life. Representative Davis, Representative Morgan is going to chair the meeting till the end. Thank you very much, Mr.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm trying to set up a meeting for tomorrow in which we're going to hear some thoughts from Representative Torkelson on clean water. And he will be first, and then Representative Hansen is trying to is going to give a presentation on the outdoor heritage bill for first time run through questions, no amendments tomorrow, but all questions that you we might have on any of the projects will be in the meeting tomorrow. That will be announced, the time will be announced. Maybe, I don't know what Friday is like, but maybe we will have a meeting Friday, or maybe we will just have caucuses on Friday. Next Monday, I plan to have a meeting. Next Tuesday, I plan to have a meeting. Next Wednesday, I plan to have a meeting. I can't think beyond that. But we are progressing nicely. Our finance bill is up in finance, and so please excuse me.
Representative Davids, I believe we are on to your bill on the agenda, House File 2272. Would you take some time to tell us about it?
Yes, I would move the bill, and you said you're on to the bill. I thought you were on to me.
Representative Davids, Representative, we're not going to move anything. We're just doing information.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Yes.
2272 would put $1 million in next year, fiscal year 2010, to provide grants, basically the farmers, small businesses, to upgrade their ground fuel storage. We've got a problem in, well, I think across the state, but especially in karst areas where the contaminants can go down and directly into the groundwater much quicker. And what this would do is this would allow grants to be provided to, as I said, farmers and small businessmen to upgrade their tanks, hopefully put automatic shutoffs on, so that we would have less groundwater contamination. That's pretty straightforward.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Could you help me out with a definition of a term in your bill here on line 1.8, karst areas?
Okay, karst areas are areas where there's a lot of limestone. It's very porous underneath the soil. And what happens in karst areas is when you have a spill, the contaminants go directly to the groundwater much quicker.
Much greater risk of contamination.
And especially in southeastern Minnesota and across other parts, where you have karst areas, a lot of times you have a lot of sinkholes. And so when you have the sinkholes, you know, the farmer's out driving his tractor and all of a sudden he's gone. The tractor's down in the sinkhole, and there it is. And we've worked very hard in southeastern Minnesota to clean up a lot of sinkholes, because in the past they were used for garbage dumps and stuff would go down, and it was in China before you knew it. And so in that area, in the karst areas, you have a very porous limestone undergirding underneath the soil, and we just want to, it's much more sensitive to spills. And some of the spills are coming from when you have automatic shutoffs, or these tanks are leaking, and we want to make sure that they have concrete berms and that we have a lesser chance of that fuel going directly down into our groundwater supply.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Are there any questions for Representative Davids?
No, there aren't.
Of course they're not. Mr. Chair, Representative Lillard, had an opportunity to be in southern Minnesota in Harmony, and I believe Representative Hansen has some of these sinkholes on his property, and there's even a cave right there on his property, or he claims it goes underneath his property. I didn't have GPS when I was in the cave, but...
Does it help with the pheasants, Representative Lillard?
I'm not sure. I understand there's turkey down there.
Turkey, okay.
A lot of good woodworking kind of things.
So. Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative David.
Representative Hansen is a land baron in Fillmore County, and so I listen very closely to him.
My sinkholes are clean.
Representative Hansen, good.
Mr. Chairman, he doesn't have any tires in there.
Well, we are over time here, folks, so if this is going to be the nature of the rest of the conversation, I'm sure we can do that offline. Members, I'd suggest you keep your eyes on your emails for notices of upcoming meetings, as the chair has suggested, and this meeting is Representative Davids.
I move.
Oh, thank you very much, Representative Davids. Representative Davids moves the minutes from the meeting of April 6th. Are there any questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The meetings from April 6th are adopted, and this meeting is adjourned.